and good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis. Patty Fink called in early that she wouldn't be here. I've never gotten a call from Patty early.
Not saying that she won't be here.
But she's listening. She might call in with some questions, because I'm not sure where she stands on this whole marriage thing.
I'm not either, because I haven't heard a wedding date yet.
We haven't heard any plans from her.
Nope.
Our guest today is Lori Burt. She's an attorney. And, Lori, you've always dealt with family law, right?
Well, technically, I deal with families way more than typical family law. That's mm-hmm. really more custody and divorce that, in my opinion, doesn't have a whole lot to do with families. Mm-hmm. But what I actually consider, my law area is considered, is estate planning. So wills, okay. trusts, powers of attorney, probate, those types of things. But in a general sense, family law, yes, I help families.
You're helping put families together, keep them together, do things wisely
and help
in
them
their
part,
family.
Yes.
Help them stay together.
Right, yes.
And this week, Lori, and who was the other?
Jamie Dugan, who is also a very active attorney in the LGBT community here in the Dallas area, and she does focus on family law. So we're a really good synergy partnership in that respect.
And they hosted a marriage equality seminar.
Yes, we did. And Jamie and I have hooked up a few times and done some seminars, but this was the first one that we got to do to really just help dispel some of the myths now and the what nows and what's left when it comes to particularly legal planning for Texans now that we've had this landmark decision.
Now, it occurs to me there are several things that work a little bit differently for the gay community than the straight community. One of them being nobody's forcing us to get married, so you have time to think about it. And one of the things we were just talking about before the show was just because you can get married doesn't mean you should get married. Doesn't mean you shouldn't, but doesn't mean you should without planning.
It is one of the most major decisions and important decisions and wonderful decisions that you can make in your life. But I am here to tell you, and other attorneys are here to tell you, and people who've gone through a divorce are here to tell you, that it comes with very serious rights and responsibilities, mm-hmm. which I know we'll expand on throughout the interview today. But mm-hmm. it is something that needs to be given careful consideration. It's not just a certificate on paper. A lot comes with it. Mm-hmm. And so it's a wonderful thing to celebrate, but I do really encourage couples to give it a good consideration on whether that's what's right for them at this time.
And so part of the seminar was people asking questions, how does this change things? Does it change things? And before the show, I was just sharing with you, after the decision, Danny and I, my husband and I, got several calls or emails, almost kind of like people were worried. It was kind of cute. People were worried that our marriage was not recognized. For those who don't know, I got married in Canada back in 2007. And
foreigner.
Yeah, I know. And we were
then
telling
came
them.
Back across the
then
border.
We came back across the border.
I don't think Donald Trump's going to like you.
Oh, he already doesn't for a whole other yeah. list of reasons. But anyway, so.
Let's get into that.
we were telling him, you know, it's cool. We don't need to do anything. And so if you could maybe talk a little bit about that for those who already were married.
Well, I can tell you that myself and a lot of others in the legal community here in Dallas have been bombarded with interesting questions mm-hmm. since the decision. And one of them is, do we need to get a marriage license in Texas? And not only do you not need to, but you should not.
Yes.
It technically, there's an argument that could be made that you're actually creating perjury because you're putting on that license that you are a single person. And the whole thrust of marriage equality is that your marriage is recognized where you live. Mm-hmm. And so my suggestion is throw a party, renew your vows, or if you really want something from Texas, get divorced and remarry. I know there are plenty of divorce attorneys out there that'd love
They'd
to help
be delighted.
You with that.
Right, right.
Now, I have a question about that, though, because I know the first marriage in Fort Worth was a couple that was already married. News media were there. It was a police officer who got married. And when she showed up, she said something, kind of mumbled under her breath, "Oh, well, we've already done this once before." And everybody was saying, ooh, you shouldn't. And yes. somebody behind the counter said, yeah, people do this all the time. I met one person yesterday or last week who got their Texas marriage license. They're getting married in 50 states.
Now, I have heard that, and I have to caution them against doing that, because the whole point, this whole fight,
right,
is to have your marriage recognized no matter where you are in this country.
And the key word is what she said is recognized. When you got married, that doesn't mean it wasn't legal.
Correct.
It was legal from get-go.
That's a very important distinction.
It's just that it wasn't recognized by
yes. Texas.
Yes.
Okay, so I have a question. If you do get married in three or four states, if you get divorced, does that divorce have to be filed? Do you have to make sure it's filed in all those states too?
No, you would not. That's the whole thing, is that it's not only marriage equality, it's really divorce equality. So if you get divorced in one jurisdiction, it is going to be for good everywhere.
But let's say you were married in Florida and you're divorced in Arizona. Does Arizona have to notify Florida that that marriage has ended?
No. No.
Okay.
It isn't done that way.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No. You're given an order from a court, and it's good everywhere.
And this is the second part of, we've discussed other things, but us as an LGBT community, a lot of this marriage stuff is completely foreign to us. We knew we wanted it. We knew we wanted the equality. But when it comes to a lot of these details, it's, I'm not sure how this works exactly.
Right.
Denise Garcia, who's a judge here in
Denton. Yeah, she's with her in church.
Yeah. right. Denise took a week off after marriage equality happened so that she could be available to marry people. And she was just so delighted. And the first day of marriage equality, she said she was really sad there were three divorces filed that day in Dallas County.
Yes.
She said pent-up demand. This wasn't something sudden. It was people who were just waiting so that they could come in and file. Talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about, first of all, the doesn't mean you should get married part of it, because there could be divorce coming along. What's entailed in a divorce?
Well, that's really important to hit on, and there are a few key things that a lot of couples need to understand immediately after this decision, and this is one of them. And not to get too technical legally, but this is a community property state, and that's a really big deal, because the minute you are recognized, you start acquiring community property. And what people need to understand is that it doesn't matter if that whose name it's in, if it's in spouse one or spouse two's name. If spouse one goes and buys a home or a car or opens an account, it belongs to the community. It belongs to that couple. And so a lot of the couples that went and got married who have not been able to get divorced, that have split up but stay in Texas, as of June 26, their marriage is recognized, which means everything that they've done since the time they split up, they have been acquiring community property, even if they have started another relationship and bought a home. So the biggest thing is that they need to be able to dissolve that relationship legally so that they can go about their lives and actually now get remarried. So for the couples who were married, who have split up and have not been able to legally get divorced, they need to see an attorney immediately to get that taken care of. And we're very fortunate in the Dallas area that we have a number of highly qualified attorneys in the LGBT community. Do not do this on your own, particularly when we talk about what I do for a living. You should not do this on your own.
Okay, so just to put this into lesbian terms, the divorce happens when the court grants it, not when the U-Haul arrives.
That's right.
Okay, okay.
That's right.
So complete difference
not when,
here.
When one U-Haul's pulling
wrong,
out and
David.
The second one's
pulling in. Okay.
Right.
Got it.
Right after the sperm donor donation shows
if people
up,
are taking
too.
Notes, that's one of the things they should take away from this show. One of the things that we were arguing about when we were saying we need marriage equality, that civil union just isn't equal, 1,000 and something rights. And along with those rights that we didn't have, we had to do $1,000 worth of paperwork just so that when your partner gets sick, you can be there in the hospital with them. Does marriage now all of a sudden eliminate the need for all this stuff?
Absolutely not. And that's actually one of the things that has been equal all along, is that heterosexual married couples have needed medical powers of attorney, wills, trusts, medical record releases, financial powers of attorney, just the same. Nobody has automatic rights to inherit your property, to make decisions, to visit you in the hospital. These are all things that need to be taken care of and have careful planning. The difference in the celebration, really, is that a same-sex spouse would have no legal recourse to be able to get those rights short of the documentation. So if a husband is sitting in the hospital and the wife is being told you can't make decisions, the wife has the legal standing in order to be appointed and to get that control. If we remember the Terri Schiavo case in Florida a while back, she was married to a man. The reason we know her is not because she wasn't married. She was. It's because she did not have a living will, a directive, a medical power of attorney, and her parents did not agree with her husband. And again, these aren't automatic rights. So,
That's what everybody was arguing. Shouldn't he have the right because he's the husband?
Right. And
the answer was no.
Yeah. He does not. But he has the ability to make the argument. But it is all the important, and I really want to make sure I get this across, is that this planning is needed to be done just as much as it ever has. Furthermore, I would argue it's even more important because we are dealing with some backlash. We are going to deal with this for a while. I feel very optimistic and want to encourage people not to get discouraged, but we're going to be dealing with courts, with hospitals, with banks that are not going to be too pleased. So the best thing you can do to protect your spouse, to protect your family, is to make sure that you have complete, thorough, and comprehensive planning in place, just as you needed to on June 25th of this year.
Are there some differences, though, now? Once you're married?
Well, yes. The differences are that you do have standing to be able to make these arguments. You do. It is important for couples. This is another thing I've gotten a lot from my clients. It is important to update, to recognize that marriage. Because two of the most important things that you establish in a will, for example, is whether you have children and whether you are married. And so couples who have wills that actually say we are unmarried, that should be corrected. I think that's a good thing to have updated.
So I understand that the need for this documentation, you still need it once you are legally married. But in the case that those documents do not exist and you are legally married, correct me if I'm wrong, wouldn't the spouse still be considered the next of kin in the case of, like, who's inheriting the stuff from one spouse? When there is no will.
Yes, you do now have standing and the ability to make that argument. But there's actually a lot of default laws people are unaware of. For example, if you have children and it is not with the person you're married to, those children are the ones that would inherit your community property, not the spouse that you're married to. So if you've got a couple, and I can finally say, it doesn't matter if they're two women, two men, a man and a woman, if you have a married couple and one has children that are not biologically or adopted by the current spouse, and that person passes away, a home that they bought together, that person's interest in that home will go to those children, not to the spouse.
So that's the default.
Here's the deal: is that I don't want to take away from the fact that this did create a lot and recognize a lot of rights for married couples when it comes to Social Security, Medicaid, family medical leave, immigration, tax status, spousal immunity, wrongful death actions. All of these things are now on the table where same-sex couples are going to be treated equally now. But when we're talking about specifically inheritance and medical decisions and all the things that I spend all day long doing, it is just as critical to have that put in place as before. But yes, there are certain defaults now that can be established, but it's going to take a lot of extra time and money to get there. So the planning needs to be done. And then you can't apply this in a vacuum. We have to look at the fact that from a societal standpoint, there's still going to be hospitals and funeral homes and even courts and financial institutions that aren't going to want to honor them. Mm-hmm. And we've seen this play out. We have county clerks and we have governors and attorney generals that are saying we're not going to recognize this when legally and factually that is incorrect. So
yes,
it's going to happen.
But the state law, doesn't that out outdo the federal law and the Supreme Court?
It is the exact opposite, Mr. Cabot. It's called federalism.
No, but in Nueces County, their county clerk said that Supreme Court decisions don't apply to Nueces County. That's not right?
That is absolutely incorrect.
I never would have thought that.
Crazy. I wouldn't have either.
This is what I'm saying. So if the love of your life that you are finally able to get married to is dying there on a hospital bed, and you know that you have a constitutionally protected right, you've got that piece of paper, but that hospital can just as likely say, oh, we don't have to recognize that. Do you want to have to go through a legal battle to have your rights enforced because now you have that? Or do you want to have the piece of paper with the medical power of attorney that says, I could be a complete stranger to this person, but I have their medical power of attorney, I'm making decisions? That's really what I'm getting at.
You know, I had an experience early this year, late last year, I forgot exactly when it was, my partner Brian had to go to the hospital. He went into emergency first. I had something to do. I knew he wasn't going to be taken right away, so I came back 2 hours later, something like that. And it's Baylor. How are they going to treat me? And I'm not one to not be treated the way I want to be treated. So I figured, well, I'll either get into Brian's room or I'll be in jail tonight. And Loopy will be looking out for me. But I have to say, every step of the way, the emergency room, when I came back in, because we didn't arrive together, you know, I wasn't with him the whole time. I said, hi, I'm here with Brian Cross. Let me show you where he is. They took me to him. We were in his room, went to surgery. Doctor came out to speak to me ahead of time, talked to me afterwards. I mean, we couldn't have been treated more like we were a married couple. But I'll tell you what, just worrying whether or not we'd be treated that way, I'm still talking about that.
No, it is a worry that has somewhat come off our shoulders.
So do you recommend, and we need to take a break in a minute, do you recommend people who are same-sex couples carry a copy of their marriage license with them to prove, yes, I can go into that hospital room?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say that. I would say you carry a copy of your medical power
of
attorney
power.
And your HIPAA release and your directive, and you carry that around. And actually, for my clients, we even have a emergency medical ID card that they can be given to carry in their wallet that has online PIN number that they can go and get that from there.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I try and think of those things.
Let's talk about that in a minute. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis, Lori Birch, who is an attorney specializing in gay family stuff. That's what's on your card, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Well, it is now. Yeah. It's my new tagline.
Yeah.
Gay family
stuff.
We'll
be back with more right after this.
This is Kimberly Truax of the GLBT Wedding Expo, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis. Lori Birch is an attorney, and she's answering all of our marriage questions because we realized, you know, we saw these other people getting married, but there's a whole lot of stuff back there that we don't really know how to do.
Just don't know how to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that part of the questions, or one of the questions at this seminar, had to do with children. That's a big part of this. But let's talk about adoption, and I know that family law specifically isn't your expertise, but in Texas, as in some other states, same-sex couples could not adopt together and both be on the same birth certificate. That's a big issue here. You could adopt in a two-step process. Do you know if that will change now?
Well, this is a really big issue. So we were just talking about how this changes and some things and doesn't change certain things for couples, but really with children of these families, that's where big shifts are being made, and we don't actually have a lot of answers right now. Currently in Texas, and again, like you mentioned when we did the seminar, Jamie Dugan is the expert when it comes to the adoption and custody and all of those things. But what I can tell you is that the way Texas currently defines this is not in the context of spouse one, spouse two, parent one, parent two, is mother and father. And so there is a presumption that when a woman is giving birth to a child, that her spouse is going to be listed on that birth certificate by virtue of the marriage. Because think of infertile straight couples. This happens all of the time, where they go through artificial insemination with an anonymous donor, and the spouse, the husband, is by default put on the birth certificate by virtue of the marriage. So that's an interesting nuance now that we're trying to understand. But what Jamie has informed me of, and in, that we're seeing playing out, is that there seems to be a bit of a misperception on the power of birth certificate, that that does not automatically entitle all these parental rights and responsibilities, that adoption is still something that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And a second parent adoption has been alive and well in Texas for quite some time, and that is the family planning needs to be looked at now, because now finally the couple is being respected in the eyes of the law when it comes to raising their families. But we're still working out a lot of the nuances on how the non-biological parent is going to be treated. But yes, before, just the last point here, before there was having to be a 1-2 punch with adoption and second adoption or birth and adoption, and now this should open the gates, but it's, again, it's being worked out and litigated, right, and all of that with great attorneys that we have here in Texas, where a same-sex married couple can adopt at the same time.
At the same time.
Yeah, because it's actually kind of silly that one parent adopts and the other one doesn't. And then the other one has to go back and adopt, and
correct,
you're both the parents.
And right, and I see what you're saying about...
except in Laurent's case, where Danny is much more the parent than Laurent.
Oh, how dare you.
And anyway, don't adopt your spouse.
No. Oh, that's a whole other basket of...
That used to be done.
It used to be done.
It's cray.
One of my professors in college, this is way back in the 1830s, he had adopted his partner.
Yeah.
It was the only way that you could show a legal relationship.
Yeah, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, don't do that anymore, people.
But just to get on your point about a birth certificate doesn't necessarily automatically grant parental rights. There is a difference, and you're right, it's the adoption decree. That's the most important thing. But I can tell you as a parent, when you go to sign your kid up for school and a lot of other things, that is the first thing that you ask for, the birth certificate. So
sure,
you do need it.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And we just, in Texas, we just don't have solid answers right now, but it is worked on. And we knew the moment this decision would come down that it would be a time to celebrate, but also a time to double our efforts into continuing mm-hmm. equality across all areas of our community.
And you're saying it's possible to do a second parent adoption, but it's only in certain counties. There's never been one done in Tarrant, as far as I know.
You know, I'm not sure if I'm not positive about Tarrant. Laurent and I were talking about how rapidly the law has evolved mm-hmm. in our favor, and it really, as much as we want so much further to go, sometimes I just have to sit and marvel at how quickly a lot of this has moved. It wasn't long ago that a lot of the second parent adoptions were being done down in Bexar County, mm-hmm. where San Antonio is, but they have migrated up, and we have a number that go on in Dallas. And
do you know, it's only within the last 6 months, I had a family law adoption attorney in Arlington tell me, oh, I never file an adoption in Tarrant County. Never. She said, that's why my office is in Arlington. I can get over to Dallas.
Right. Yeah. No. And you don't have to be a resident of the county in order to go to a different county. That's a venue requirement that can be waived.
Yes.
And so it's more just being a resident of Texas. And so really, it's just a matter of getting the advice. So we all like the idea of being trailblazers, but when it comes to something like that, if you go and try to get an adoption approved and it's denied, it's game over. Mm-hmm. So I don't fault those couples that aren't wanting first in Tarrant County or Collin County, where I live.
You know, when it comes to the kids come first.
Yeah.
Let the rest of us take care of the gay rights fights. The kids come first when you're a parent. And I think gay parents have been exemplary in that, showing that that's true.
And you know, the data and the statistics are out there to prove that. We don't try to, brag about that, but it actually does show.
It does, yeah. So are there, but aside from the adoption issue, How else has this ruling, the marriage equality ruling, how else does that affect kids? Or does it?
Well, when it comes to, again, more just family planning going into it, but when you're able to have, let me backtrack, when you read the decision, which is a beautifully written decision, you can't say that a lot for legal opinions, but a lot of it does have to do with children. And so there's a great argument to be made as far as the legal rights and responsibilities, but when we really look at the social structure and the connectedness and the legitimacy that you give families in the eyes of the law and of society, it makes a huge difference. And one of the best books that I read years ago called Why Marriage Matters, there was a story of a lesbian couple who had a child, and the child was talking about her friend and her friend's parents, and they were asking, well, you know, little Sally's parents, of course they love each other. Well, do mommy and I love each other? Well, no, you don't. And she just looked shocked, and she looked at her kid and said, well, why would you say that? Well, if you loved each other, you'd be married.
Oh.
And
wow.
Let's talk about all the legal fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I deal with that all day long. I love it. Yeah. But this is really the heart of the matter.
That's the real thing.
Yeah.
And, Lauren, when you were looking for your first pediatrician, I remember you talked about shopping around. Would this pediatrician who deals with newborn kids accept Gabrielle as a patient because she had two dads?
Right.
How disgusting that you have to even do that. Would the school that you sent her to treat her equally because she has two dads? What are you talking about?
Right.
It's a 5-year-old kid. You better treat her.
Right. You would think.
But you had to do that.
Yeah, you have to.
Legally, I would think, as a married couple, when things don't go right, there'd be some more legal recourse now.
I don't want to speak out of turn to that, because that's really not the area of law that I focus on. I mean, ultimately, the thrust of this decision is that it is being able to bring same-sex couples up to the level that heterosexual couples are afforded and are given. And
I would think at the very least at Gabrielle's school, well, you're a married couple.
Right.
And if that's not going to happen this year, but in a year it will, and it'll happen at more schools in 2 years and in 3 years. I just think it brings more acceptance where the parents won't have to go to a public school and say, will you accept my kid and treat my kid equally?
And I think, David, what you're getting at is part of this overall movement and part of any type of social justice movement is that there's only so much you can achieve legally.
Right.
And just because on June 26th, marriage equality was across the land, it doesn't mean June 27th we woke up and 100% of the country agreed with it. And one of the things I was talking to Lauren about was the actual story of the case that got led to the Supreme Court. And I don't think we talk about that enough. And this was a male couple where his partner was dying of ALS, and they lived in Ohio, and they were flown, they flew and on the tarmac in Maryland, said their vows to be married, so now partner becomes husband, mm-hmm. flies back, he passes away, and all he wanted to do was to be listed on his death certificate. And so the point in that, I think that when we tell these stories, and it's going to be the parents to your particular question that you're bringing up, David, is what's going to change hearts and minds. When people start to understand, and they are understanding, that's mm-hmm. what's making this huge shift publicly, that these are real people, these are real couples, these are real families. And rather than applying this broad brush and this vacuum and putting this category of LGBT people over in a nice little box, when you realize it's your neighbors, it's your doctors, it's your lawyers, then it starts to open people's minds and hearts. And that's where the real change comes.
Do you know, obviously in Dallas County, people were expecting a rush. In some of these smaller counties, I think one of the reasons a lot of the county clerks were delaying was, well, we're not going to be asked to do that. And they just didn't even think about it. And once they were asked, a number of them, it took a couple of days. Now, we've had two county clerks out of 254 that quit, but we have 252 counties that either are issuing or said they would issue. We only have two holdout counties right now. We'd have 254. That's pretty good in 3 weeks, I think.
I think it is, too. And one of the things that I've spoken a lot to is that we have to, and I knew before this decision came down that we were going to face backlash, and we're going to. And I just want to encourage our community to stay vigilant, to stay positive and not let this stuff get to them, but also to stay respectful and treat people with dignity and compassion even when we're not being treated that way. And a lot of the things we're hearing is a pretext for bigotry, but we are winning this, and truth and love always win in the end, and we are. And we just need to stay focused on the big picture here and understand that we're going to hear a lot of this confusion, a lot of these issues, and I think some of it's legitimate confusion, but I think a lot of it's also a pretext for discrimination, saying that we have to update forms and all of that.
Yeah, sure. Now, to make it even worse for Texas, Mississippi, by the end of the first week, maybe it was the beginning of the second week, every county was issuing marriage licenses.
I think it was the first week.
Well, that's
the
a end. Smaller state. Let's be fair to our Lone Star State here.
But it's Mississippi.
But Mississippi.
It's still Mississippi. Well, before the show, we talked about the domino effect that I think, it's just going to happen from this decision, even outside of just the marriage issues. And one of those is job discrimination. And we just got a big ruling this week from the EEOC. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, absolutely. And I know that a lot of people, even within the community and outside the community, want to put an asterisk on this victory and say that's not the whole thing. And no, it's not. We still have a lot of inroads to make when it comes to LGBT individuals and families being treated as equally as any other family or an individual. But I think that we are missing the boat when we don't understand that when we look at the marriage equality victory as an isolated victory. I believe this will absolutely, and we were seeing it, like you were saying, Laron, as a domino effect. Because tell me how a couple can go get married and come back to work and get fired because of that marriage, because they exercised a constitutionally protected right. I mean, the writing's on the wall that employment discrimination, that's still on
board.
I
could see Scalia arguing that yeah, you can get married, but
he can write all the dissents he wants with his jiggery pokery and his pure applesauce all he wants. But you know what? He's on the losing end, and he's going to continue to be there.
Yeah. Do you think it'll take, who knows, do you think it'll take another Supreme Court decision to enshrine that?
When it comes to employment discrimination, I personally don't think so. This has been something that's been kicked around Congress for quite some time, and I believe that when we start looking at how we've had Don't Ask, Don't Tell repealed, we've had the DOMA decision, we've now had marriage equality, we've got the decision with EEOC, what the military is doing, recognizing trans soldiers.
Right.
This is something that I think that when it comes to non-discrimination, that we could possibly see this get passed in
Congress. Let's go back to the EEOC decision. What does that actually mean? When you file an employment lawsuit, fired because you're a lesbian, fired because you're transgender, what does this EEOC decision actually mean in your lawsuit?
Well, I do want to clarify something that you just said, because I know that we just tacked the T on to the acronym there.
It.
And they in the trans community does not get to always reap the benefits of some of the inroads that are made for the gay and lesbian community. And so I just want to say that, because I know that that's an area that there's still a lot of work to be done on. So I don't know that the EEOC decision or any employment non-discrimination decision without recognizing gender expression or identity is going to get us there. The issue is that it's more a sex discrimination,
right,
rather than a sexual orientation discrimination, because now you're classifying two different types of marriages, and you can't do that because marriages are equal in the eyes of the law. So it's turning the argument on a dime, saying that this isn't really sexual orientation discrimination being fired from your job. It's really a sex discrimination because you're married to a man, not a woman, or a woman, not a man.
And if you say that we don't discriminate based on sex, then it doesn't matter.
So EEOC has ruled this. The case goes to court. It's been approved to go to court. What weight does the EEOC have in the court's decision?
Well, the EEOC is a regulatory agency that doesn't cover all employment. Mm-hmm. And so we still need a comprehensive Employment Non-Discrimination Act to really paint a broader brush for
But
for
it
everybody.
Could make the difference in a number of cases, though.
It could. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, after the DOMA decision, I believe federal government actually said that they were not going to discriminate for federal employees. Mm-hmm. So it's all steps on the
I would
journey.
Think for large employers who have been some of the holdouts, I mean, most large employers don't discriminate, don't purposely discriminate. I'm sure there's some discrimination that goes on. But I would think for those holdouts in the Fortune 500 who haven't added sexual orientation to their non-discrimination policies, this might be a step that would encourage them, you know, it's such a good idea to be discriminating
right.
against.
And interestingly enough, it was Roberts who made the, I don't know if it was his argument, but he did make the point during the oral arguments of mm-hmm. the marriage equality case that it could be
decided
based on sex,
yeah.
on sex discrimination. And, I mean, he still voted against us, mm-hmm. but that was his argument, and I
yeah.
think that's been a lot of people's argument.
Well, it was a loser argument several years ago, and I can't give you the exact years. I know it was when I was in law school, so it was a while ago, that it used to be trying to get in the door, into the legal door, using sex discrimination when someone's being discriminated against based on being gay or lesbian was a loser of an argument, but that's kind of turned the corner here. And that it is really becoming about a sex discrimination, which we've already had enshrined mm-hmm. in our non-discrimination. And so it's an interesting mm-hmm. argument. The point about Roberts' mm-hmm. dissent when we were talking about Scalia earlier, you got to love these guys because they have been writing the majority's opinions for years. In the Lawrence v. Texas case that finally struck down sodomy, mm-hmm. Scalia said in that dissent that this is going to lead to gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude was right. And
he's
then
right.
Here we get DOMA, and his DOMA dissent basically could be the majority opinion for our marriage equality case. So don't get too hung up on them. They make great future majority decisions.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis. Lori Birch is our guest today. We'll continue talking about just because you can get married doesn't mean you should get married, and doesn't mean you shouldn't, but you should start thinking about some things along the way.
This is Jason Wright from Dallas, and I listen to Lambda Week 89.3 K.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis. We were talking with Lori Birch last segment, and we said something about how we create our relationships. A caller, and I hope we have this right, that he was talking about why is it a bad idea to adopt your partner? Adoption is permanent, and that makes you family.
That is one of the arguments for it. I'm sorry I just brought it up because it's something that I don't know that is actually as common as it once was. But there's a lot of issues with that. And the only reason, from my speculation, that would have been done in for same-sex couples because we didn't have civil unions, domestic partnership, and now marriage equality. So if you're just trying to have a legal relationship with your partner, then you can just get married now. Congratulations.
Right. Just don't need to do it anymore.
Yeah. The other issue is this little thing called incest. So that's a crime. And so if you actually adopt your partner and you can fill in the blanks there. But then David, what you said as well is a huge issue, is that you can get divorced if a relationship sours.
Yeah.
But it's pretty hard to sever that.
Unadopted.
And there's
unadopted.
We could probably spend an hour talking about the differences that of rights and responsibilities you get when you have a parent child relationship versus a spouse relationship.
Absolutely.
You know, right after college I was dating somebody. And my mother had recently died. His parents were divorced, so we set up my father with his mother, and they were dating for a while. And that was kind of fun until we realized, what if they get married? This is going to – we'd be brothers.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was just creepy.
Yeah, creepy.
Well,
yeah.
I do know, since, you know, I do estate planning with wills, I do know that there have been families, wealthy families in particular, that will define adoption has to be a child of under a certain age, mm-hmm. so that a same-sex partner could not adopt their partner, mm-hmm. and thereby make them part of the estate. When they say, if I want everything to go to my children, if my children don't survive me, then to their children. And that was a way for a same-sex partner to be included in that.
And the one that I knew, a professor of mine, did that with his partner, and it was entirely for estate reasons.
Yes. And so actually, as an estate plan attorney that does drafting, you can actually draft to say you can't. This will not include an adult adoption. Mm-hmm. But bottom line is the legal landscape is so different now that I can't fathom a single reason that you would mm-hmm. you would need to do that or want to do that. And again, I have to get back to the problem with incest.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So don't adopt.
Well, there's also the problem that the one that's the parent is responsible for the one that's being adopted. It's not an equal partnership.
It's all, and then what if it is a situation where there's going to be kids brought into it? It's just mm-hmm. it's just bad all around. A bad idea.
Okay.
The thing is that you have much better alternatives that recognize what your relationship truly is.
Right. Okay, so when we're talking about just because you can get married doesn't mean you should get married, there are an awful lot of things like, because we haven't been able to get married. You know, in 1 week I went to a wedding. George and Jack were together 54 years. I went to one, though, that had been together 35 years. Another one had been together 30 years.
Wow.
Should they have gotten married? Were they rushing into anything? Of course not.
Of course not. But you also have those who've been together for 30 days. And, they're just caught in the moment.
Sure.
And they want to go get married. Now, being fair to them, straight people do this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. You still shouldn't do it necessarily.
Well, we're just throwing out
here's what I was thinking of. You have a couple live their lives together, either that or in their 50s met each other. They each have their own careers. What are the Social Security and the pension and the other things that they need to think about, because at that age, those things are as important as whether or not you're going to file joint taxes and whether or not you have community property. A couple that's meeting later in life, they might have each built up their own whatever. They can take care of themselves, but they'll actually lose some things as a result of getting married. And one example, when my father got remarried, they did not actually marry because she would have lost her husband's pension.
Yeah, I've seen that happen. The bottom line is that same-sex married couples should be treated equally as heterosexual married couples, period. When you apply the circumstances to individuals, and this is why people don't give broad legal advice, is because every circumstance is different.
Right.
You have to decide what is right for you and your family. It's having the choice to get married. It's not obligating you to get married. But there are.
And I'm just thinking, are there other examples like that that maybe an older couple needs to think
about?
Well,
I'll give you a great example of not an older couple. And this was something that came up with a couple, I think, last year. So female couple, they have a child that is going to college, and only one of them is the biological parent. No second parent adoption, nothing else done for the partner, but she's raised this kid. So in their mind, this is their kid. Well, they were applying for financial aid, for FAFSA.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at, if you're married, they're going to look at household income. So they actually chose not to get married till their kids through college, so that the partner's income doesn't suddenly disqualify her for as much aid. So there's a lot of very nuanced decisions that people can make. This isn't a same-sex couple. To your point with older couple, I won't say who it was in my life, but I had someone in my life who chose to not get remarried because she had better health insurance through her deceased husband. Mm-hmm. And to get remarried would have disqualified her.
Right.
And so, again, it can't be applied in a vacuum. The point is that you're treated equally as any other couple or family.
But the good point about all of those situations is that they thought it through.
Yeah, yes.
And that's really the larger point. Whether you've been together 30 years, 30 days, mm-hmm. you need to think it through before you do it or not do it.
And I guess not to beat up on people who want to rush into something, it's really just make sure that you have an understanding
right.
of what comes with it. And then you make whatever decision you
okay,
want.
Okay, so here's what happened in Dallas. In Dallas, the first week, they issued 170 marriage licenses. In Austin, 360. In Houston, some number in the multi-hundreds. What's our reputation in Dallas? We have, you know, our attitude, and we over-organize and we over-plan, right? I think we're doing marriage that way, too. A lot of the people who got married were together. You know, a couple of the judges I talked to who were voiding the 3-day waiting period said, yeah, most of the people that I've voided that for have been together 15 years or more. Those are people who've been thinking about it and planning it. But most of us are planning to have some kind of a wedding. We're going to have family. We're going to have friends. We're going to plan. We're going to plan. We're going to plan. We're going to plan. Because that's what we do in Dallas.
Heck yeah.
So
Dallas, it's what everyone in Dallas is talking about.
Right. And what we're doing here, it's driving the rest of the state crazy, let me tell you. I mean, I went down to the Houston parade. They were all getting married.
Yeah.
They were all planning. They were going to do it quickly. Not here. Not here.
Yeah,
Had
I not done it already, we wouldn't have gotten married the next day or next week or next month. We would have planned it out. So
you would have planned something.
I would have planned something,
yeah.
Just like we did.
Right. Yeah, they planned so much.
And that's fine. Again, the point is having the option to
having
exercise
the option.
That
sure,
right,
you're right,
just like any other couple in Houston or Austin. We just choose not to. We want the big party.
Well, and I think a lot of these couples that did get married really did plan it. Because like I said, that week I went to 3 weddings for people who'd been together 30 years or more. How much more planning can couples
sure.
like that do?
Sure.
Although there are some things.
Well, going back to the point of, you know, about divorce, that's not something we think about a lot in the gay community because we haven't even had the option to get married. But, you know, divorce is serious. Because, like you were saying, it's a community property, but just even doing it can be pretty costly.
Absolutely. And I will say, doing it, let's preface it with this, cheap gets very expensive. So if you try to do an inexpensive divorce, I assure you at some point that's going to become much more expensive than it was. Same thing with trying to do your own will, mm-hmm. your own medical documents. So not only are we trying to help educate people that you need to have these things put in place, you need to have this planning, you also need to seek out the professionals mm-hmm. to guide you through that and not try to do it on your own. Because I see many divorces, the house title wasn't changed properly, the mortgage wasn't changed properly, and then trying to do parenting agreements without having some legal enforcement and, mm-hmm. and decision making behind it. It's just a mess. You're just mm-hmm. asking for a mess.
Right.
Okay, so if somebody is getting divorced, what do you do? What are the steps?
Well, I would defer to my good friend Jamie Dugan, the mm-hmm. family law attorney that I did the seminar with. The first thing is you call your own attorney mm-hmm. and find out what the steps are.
Right.
But I can tell you what it's going to entail is mm-hmm. it's going to entail filing mm-hmm. A petition for divorce, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a lot of negotiating between both parties as far as how they're going to settle their assets, and if there's kids, how they're going to make those decisions. And it can and everything flows from there. And it may be simple, maybe everybody's agreeable, and it can be over and done with relatively quickly, or it will be a drag down fight mm-hmm. and it can get very, very expensive.
So probably the best way, if you want to keep the cost down, is to come to some agreements and do it as pleasantly as you can.
To do that, or one thing we haven't talked about that a lot of people shy away from, but they're really good ideas, is premarital agreements.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you I like them, and I'm not a divorce attorney. I like them because of that whole community property thing we've been talking about, where the minute you say your I do's, so much of everything that you acquire, whether it's your name, both names, or whatnot, is belongs to both of you. And this is a way to say, this is mine, this is yours, this is ours. And it makes it cleaner and easier.
Okay, so what are the steps to get married now? And the reason I'm even saying that is we had this discussion in my office. When somebody said, oh, we're getting married in September, what do we do?
Right. Well, you have to go apply for a marriage license, which there is a 72-hour waiting period, but there are many judges, like Judge Denise Garcia you mentioned earlier, that can waive that, and you can get married immediately, but not a lot of people are wanting to do that. They need to get the license.
But step one, you get the license at a county clerk's office, any county clerk across the state, except for two, Erie and Hartley counties.
I was going to ask which ones.
But Erie is west of San Angelo, and Hartley is on the New Mexico border, one square state down from Oklahoma. What I know about counties all of a sudden in Texas is, so first you go to a county clerk's office and get the license. Then?
Then you find someone who has the legal authority to marry you.
And that's a good question. Who has the legal authority? Does it have to be a judge, a religious someone, or?
It can be a judge, a JP, or a clergy member who is recognized by that faith as able to perform a wedding.
Okay.
Correct.
So you're married. Then what do you do? There's one last step.
When you're married?
Yeah, you have to file the document with the back at the county clerk's office. You have to return to the
county. I have been married, but it was in California, so I could not tell
you. You're right, but the person, at least in where we got married, they did it for you.
Well, that was in Vancouver, though.
Yes. Yeah, but you're right.
We don't do that in
Texas.
You
don't do that here?
Go back yourself. The license is good for 3 months. So if you're getting married in September, you can go anytime now, get your license. It's good for 3 months, but you have to file it by the end of 90 days.
There you go.
That's how it's done in Texas. It's really very easy. But those are the steps. And it's funny because all of us sitting here talking about it, it's like, yeah, well, what do you do? Because we've never had to even think about it.
Right.
Right.
So any last advice on anything else that people need to think about before they get married? There's all the financial stuff, which if you have a complicated estate, go to a financial planner and make sure that it's going to still work when you're married, I would think.
Just to reemphasize there, it is important to look at a lot of different factors when you're deciding to create this legal union with another human being. And if it was not a big deal, we would not have fought so hard to get it, and just want people to understand that when it comes to legal ramifications, you need to sit down and talk to qualified professionals. And as I said earlier, we are very fortunate in Dallas and Fort Worth to have so many great attorneys and other specialized professionals in the LGBT community or who are friendly to our community. And it is important because a lot of things are outside of just the documents we're talking about. The way you set up your bank accounts, do you have joint accounts, right? A survivorship, PODs, how do you set up your beneficiaries on life insurance, retirement? All of that has nothing to do with what you put in your will. It all preempts that. So it's one thing that we didn't mention, and it's where a lot of people make missteps. And that's why you need to go to someone who's going to help guide you on thinking holistically about your lives together.
And, you know, I never thought about it before, but since Texas is a community property state, if you were to divorce and your spouse has a bank account somewhere, you still own half of it, unless there was a prenuptial agreement about it, right?
Yes. If it was something that you acquired during the marriage, if it was a bank account that you had prior to the marriage that had $10,000 in it, and then it had $30,000 in it, then that $20,000 now belongs to both of you. So
okay, but let's say you're still married. You're not getting divorced.
Right.
The spouse has a bank account somewhere. Do you have access to it?
You don't, again, that's part of this presumption that you have right. automatic rights. No, you do not. Mm-hmm. You have ownership of it by virtue of the marriage, but from a practical standpoint, that doesn't allow you to have any access to be able to control that. You would either need to be added to an account or you would need to have a financial power of attorney.
So Danny would be smart to be divorcing LaRon right now to get access to all this money if he's been stashing
that
away.
That is probably the best way to have access to yes. it. Yes, mm-hmm. I'm definitely
but he, that means he has to find out about the. He has to find out about my secret account.
Okay, yeah, he doesn't listen to the show, does he?
There you go.
It's outside of U.S. jurisdiction.
We have a couple more minutes. We always talked about all these this paperwork that you needed to have done. What are, let's just go through them real quickly. What are some of the things? There's the medical power of attorney we talked about.
So I can tell you, and not all attorneys do the full range of what I truly mm-hmm. believe. But from a core standpoint, and of course, there's going to be things like revocable living trusts and other things that people will need. But from a core standpoint, you need to have a will. And in a will, you can define guardianship and trust for kids. You should have a medical power of attorney. You should have a medical record release so that those who are making medical decisions are able to have access to those medical records. Sometimes attorneys will put the HIPAA language within the medical power of attorney, and that's fine. I think it's better separately, but the point is it's addressed. There's the directive to physicians, which is the Texas living will, and that's basically the pull-the-plug document. There is a financial power of attorney, which you may have seen before, statutory durable power of attorney. This is what allows somebody that, say, if you're hospitalized in an accident, can have access to and make decisions for financial decisions, have access to bank accounts, be able to call creditors and so forth. And then I also think you should have an appointment of agent for adult guardianship in a later event that you become incapacitated or legally incompetent. And that's important because if a guardianship is needed for you, it's a court proceeding. And when that happens, the judge appoints a guardian. And if you haven't pre-designated that, whomever the judge deems is best, that will override the person making medical decisions and financial decisions. And then I also think it's important to have this wonderfully titled document, appointment of agent to controlled disposition of remains. Now, while it's not pretty, you can imagine that that's a very critical and emotional time and decision. And so to appoint someone who can oversee any type of funeral, burial, cremation. And that's a quick rundown of the type of documents, but you need the advice on how your beneficiaries and bank accounts are all set up.
Right. Go talk to an attorney.
Hold on. Stay here. Let's just do the legal ID.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And we're back. The next show isn't here yet.
Oh.
So let's just keep chatting a little bit.
Let's
Lori,
riff.
Can you stick with us?
Yeah, heck yeah.
Okay, so we rushed through a couple of those things just now. Give us a little bit more about what some of those things protect. Like the medical power of attorney can be overridden, however...
What I was saying is that if something more severe happens to you, say stroke, brain aneurysm, Alzheimer's, dementia, if a guardianship is needed for you, it is a court proceeding where a judge has to legally determine that you are legally incompetent. And I always say legally incompetent because I have to qualify that for a lot of people because,
as opposed to Patty,
you know, I'm questioning all of you guys in the room right now. And so it has to be a legal determination. But right. when you have somebody appointed as what's called guardian of the person, guardian of the estate, that essentially takes over from whoever may have been making temporary medical decisions or temporary financial decisions. And then actually prior to June 26th, this was an area where families could really go in and change the game for same-sex couples because you could go get appointed guardian, and even if that couple had a medical power of attorney and financial power of attorney. So it's important to have. The other thing that I want to emphasize, and I don't know why this has been a major question that I get a lot, if you are not married, the marriage equality decision does not affect you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I had to explain that to so many people that they'll say, okay, well, now that we've got this decision, how does this change our planning? I'm like, you're not married.
Right.
So it doesn't.
You know where I think that comes from? It comes from all of these people who are up in arms that same-sex couples can now get married, and it's going to destroy marriage as we know it. So they're thinking, well, if they're saying that side, well, then it's going to do everything for us.
If you're getting these questions from gay and lesbian or any LGBT individuals, perhaps they're thinking this: if I have all of those documents, I don't need to get married. And that's,
you know, yes,
that could be
That kind of flips the script on what
right.
we were just mm-hmm. talking about. And that's not true either.
That's not
now,
true either.
Having the documents does give you a lot of rights and responsibilities to your partner or spouse.
Right.
But by virtue of marriage, and I listed them earlier, Social Security,
right.
immigration, taxes, family medical leave, their spousal immunity, wrongful death actions. I mean, there's a lot of things that you would not have without a marriage. But mm-hmm. Dave was bringing up earlier, there are some things that it adversely affects a couple if they were to get married. But I think right. the core of the issue, mm-hmm. because there's nothing more fundamental to you being gay or lesbian than who you love.
Mm-hmm.
And being married is the highest level of recognition and acknowledgement of that relationship. So marriage equality is huge, but mm-hmm. it does not mean that it does everything.
Right.
And it's nice to get into all these nuts and bolts, but at the end of the day, if you're going to get married, do it because you love that person, you want to commit to that person, and you can figure out how that changes your legal life.
Mm-hmm.
But make those decisions based on all mm-hmm. the traditional type of love.
All right.
Lori, thank you so much for being
thank
with
you
us.
So much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.